are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
It's a jumpstart into your Tuesday on the Amy Beth Berkley Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Busy day for sure, the free-flow pop culture combo. GOP is on cruise control, but will there be a birther movement from the left? And why is Stephen King engaged in a war of words with the governor of Maine? So it looks like Starbucks' much ballyhooed race talk has shut down before it even begins. But we'll talk. Also, a sneak peek at our Spring Awakening special, inspiration to action, shout it, and you on the line if you're listening live. It is Tuesday, March 24th, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east, number in motion 347-857-4505. The busy Twitter feed is abuzz, where it's been all weekend in anticipation of our justice spotlight at AB Rights. I think the Facebook page is open too, so comment, question, we want to hear from you. The show today brought to you in part by Audiophile, from music to books to podcasts, caress your ears with everything you want to hear at Audiophile. Also by Kellogg's, Wake Up, Breakfast is Waiting. And justice has been waiting, some say, for decades for Robert Durst, the strange case that has been captivated all of us for at least until since the Jinx premiered on HBO, that series we've been talking about. But Durst has been living under this cloud of criminal culpability and suspicion since 1982, when his first wife, Kathleen McCormick Durst, went missing, presumed dead, but the body was never found. He was never charged, went about his odd life. In 2000, his friend and confidant, Susan Berman, was murdered in L.A. He wasn't charged then with the crime. In fact, she had some underworld mob ties, and I think they were considering it a mob hit because she was also a crime writer. So he went about his business. But around that time, or a year later, in Westchester County, where I live, then DA, now Fox News host Jeanine Pirro, was beefing up the case against Durst regarding his first wife's disappearance. So he fled. He moved to Galveston, Texas, went off the grid, disguised himself as a mute woman named Dorothy, took a residence in kind of a ramshackle apartment building, befriended the local curmudgeon Morris Black, who was also something of a drifter, I guess. And the two men became friends for a while, but got into some kind of a scuffle. We're not sure what happened, but Morris Black wound up dead, and Durst admitted he killed him, but claimed self-defense. He did dismember his body and dispose of it in the Galveston Bay, but the jury bought his story. He was a defendant. He testified in his own behalf and was acquitted of the murder. And then, again, went about his business pretty quietly until, I guess it was a few years ago, Andrew Jarecki came out with a film, very thinly disguised, a fictional account of the Durst story in a movie called All Good Things. Durst apparently saw the movie, contacted the director, Andrew Jarecki, and said, "Hey, I saw the movie. Do you want to sit down and talk?" And they did, and this documentary series was born, much against, of course, the advice of his attorneys, and here we are on the eve of the finale of the series. Durst was arrested with a warrant from L.A. and New Orleans for the murder of Susan Berman. Some of the evidence that surfaced in this documentary, including a so-called confession. I'm pretty sure lawyers can have that one tossed out. We'll find out, but fortunately, we have a lawyer, a top legal eagle, on the phone with us here today. David Diamond is a criminal defense attorney in L.A., where Durst may be headed back to if New Orleans lets him go. And he also comments on high-profile cases for various outlets, including ours. He helped us deftly analyze both the high-profile Jody Arias and George Zimmerman trials about a year ago. It's been too long, David. I'm so happy you're back to sift through the twists, turns, and developments in this strange case. So welcome back.
Thanks, Amy. It's a pleasure to be back here with you.
Happy. I have a feeling we're going to be calling on you quite a bit for this one. The development now, we have Durst had a hearing yesterday, and his lawyers wanted to get back on bail. That was denied. They also wanted to drop the charges against him altogether, both the California charges and, of course, specifically, he's being held in New Orleans on, I think it is, gun and drug paraphernalia possession charges. Is that right? And they're not letting him go. He's being held without bail. In fact, he's held in a mental health unit, I guess, because he's on suicide watch. What do you know about the latest developments?
Well, this case has so much to it that I need a flow chart just to explain everything that's going on in all the various states
yeah,
and charges.
Exactly. Right.
Let's start with Louisiana. You're correct. Drug paraphernalia, drugs, marijuana, and weapons. And those charges themselves, we can get into double digits if he's convicted. Now, his lawyer there wants to suppress the evidence. He thinks that the police didn't properly obtain the warrant to go into the hotel room. So he wants to fight those grounds. He did try to get them dismissed immediately. He'll have to probably do a more formal motion to make those go away. And he tried to have the bail set so he could go, but he was Durst was deemed to be a flight risk, which we all know because of everything you just explained. He's the perfect example of what a flight risk is in this country in terms of the court system.
Yeah, well, he admitted it. He admitted that he fled the first time he got bail for the Morris Black murder. He said, yeah, he paid the money and just fled, then got arrested in Pennsylvania stealing a chicken salad sandwich, this multimillionaire, and got hauled back. So one would say, on the psychological side of things, perhaps he's trying to get caught. He wants to get caught. I mean, I know there's all this armchair psychology running around about him and trying to figure out, does he want to confess? I just found out yesterday, I didn't realize this, he's also very ill. Apparently he has cancer, and maybe it's in serious stages. So is he trying to make some kind of a deathbed confession? I mean, what do you read into any of this?
They don't teach a lot of psychology in law school for a variety of reasons, but I can tell you this. Yeah. In looking into everything, there are a lot of people that I've seen, that I've read about, that when they commit crimes and they're not caught, they want to tell somebody. It's a very important thing for them to be able to confess what they did. In his case, it seems perhaps maybe a little bit more of the bragging and wanting to let people know, look, I tricked the system, I got away with this, and let me, you know, let it out, whereas others just feel the need and are compelled to admit it. So he is sick, and that's a factor taken into consideration. But here's the thing. Just pulling up the internet this morning, now we're talking about another missing woman, the Middlebury College female student
yes.
in Vermont.
I heard that.
So. The list is growing, and so a smart man would start coming up with reasons to get some compassionate, you know, treatment. Obviously, I don't think he's making up the medical conditions, but he's going to be obtaining a lot of airline flight miles, because he's going to be going from Louisiana, California, possibly over to Vermont, to face these charges one by one by one. Right now, it's just a tug of war to see which prosecuting agency gets the first bite at the apple.
Yeah, and certainly I know Dick
DeGaron, right,
who was his lead defense attorney in the Morris Black case, is taking the lead, it seems, here. I'm not sure if he practices in California or not. He may be calling you to help him if he doesn't when they get out to California. He seems to be very eager to get him to California because he really wants to, quote-unquote, prove his innocence in the Susan Berman case. But the thing is, he did testify on his own behalf, and they showed clips of that testimony in the Jinx. I don't know if you watched it. And it was compelling, and you're almost saying, hey, wait a minute. I mean, he convinced the jury. I mean, the jury bought his story that it was self-defense, and the reason why he dismembered the body, which is so gruesome to even consider how you even go about doing that and disposing of it, was because he was panicked, that he thought he was going to get caught, that Jeanine Pirro was after him, and all of this kind of stuff, and they bought it. So do you think he'd testify again in the Susan Berman case?
He might, and I think the reason is, he might tell his lawyer, I want to testify, because of the, you know, perhaps the arrogance, the braggadocio. Remember, in California, the decision to testify rests solely with the defendant. It's a decision we often, as defense attorneys, try to talk our clients into or not into, but ultimately the judge will say, forget your attorney right here, sir or ma'am. I want to know from you, do you want to testify? This is your decision and no one else's decision to make. So whether or not his attorney may say, I don't want you to testify, I don't want you to do this, he still might say, you know what, I did it once. I'm going to convince these 12 men and women again that I didn't do it, and I'm not responsible.
He thinks he can do it, I think. What about the so-called sensational confession? You heard it, certainly, even if you didn't watch the show, because it's been on the news umpteen times. Do you find it compelling? As a lawyer, I'm pretty sure I could figure out how you would go about getting it either tossed out or squashed in terms of the impact of it to the jury. How would you explain it away?
It's interesting. It's a very interesting, and I have heard it, and I've listened to it in the context of how it was made or the tone, and, you know, try the analytical part of it that lawyers try to adhere to when we're listening to statements like that. It's something. It's kind of a sword and a shield in the way I read it. Now, obviously, he says I killed him, and that's a hard thing to get around. But anytime someone's on, you know, TV or camera or doing a documentary, doing a reality show, people say things to be, you know, entertaining, and I would make the argument, if I was his attorney, and say, look, he was just doing what they were having him do, which was make this documentary, make it as sensationalized as possible, and play to the camera, play to the critics, and obtain greater ratings. And that's what he was doing. Ultimately, was trying to, you know, help HBO, help the producers get some greater ratings in the show.
Really, I don't know if that would work. Oh, really? Because I would think, I would say he was just being sarcastic. Like, you know, sometimes you say, oh, yeah, you caught me. Yeah, right, I did it. You know, that kind of thing. That, even though he's a flat affect, but that's what kind of his affect in general when he said, you're right, I killed them all. I think that would be more, you'd have a better shot at saying he was being sarcastic than he was playing along with them. First of all, they're claiming, I think they want to try to get it completely tossed on the basis of saying he didn't even know he was mic'd. You know, he didn't realize he was still mic'd when he went to the bathroom, and in the bathroom they presume a certain degree of privacy. I don't know if that would fly. I would just go with the, it must be sarcastic. He's just sort of saying, eh, you know, sure, I did it, that kind of thing.
I don't think it's going to fly to get it tossed. I think that they're, the legal phrase is the reasonable expectation of privacy. When do we as American citizens have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and where does that, you know, where does that list? If we're sitting in our home, the police can't film us from, you know, 2 miles above in an ultra-powerful telescope from a helicopter. But if you're in a bathroom, which is a public place, you know, I don't know too many people, too many men that go into the bathroom and start, you know, saying things because they believe it. Well, you know, this is there's a code in here. This is the men's bathroom, and nothing's going to be portrayed to the public. I don't think there is any expectation of privacy in the bathroom. I think that argument will fail. I think he's going to has to rest upon the California juries, which are somewhat unpredictable, as I can tell you from first-hand experience, and you know, all it takes is one, as they say. You just need to get one of the 12 to say, you know what, I don't really think this was a true confession, whether it was sarcasm, as you're saying, whether it was him just shooting his mouth off to try to please people, whatever it might be, he only needs one, and it sounds like his lawyer really wants to come out here and fight this case.
Yeah, well, the other big alleged smoking gun in the show was the so-called cadaver letter, and the, comparing his block letter signature, handwriting rather, to another letter that he admits he wrote to Susan Berman while she was still alive. I don't know, because I'm not a handwriting expert, but even on first glance, yeah, there are similarities. Certainly he spelled the name, or the name Beverly in Beverly Hills was spelled wrong the same way in both cases, but that could be a fairly common error, I don't know. I did notice there were some, you know, similarities, but they are block letters, and the L's looked a little bit different to me, and I'm not a handwriting expert, so I'm guessing they're going to have handwriting experts on both sides, and it becomes the, you know, the war of the experts, and that sometimes gets tossed. What's your impression of that so-called smoking gun evidence?
Well, when you have a battle of the experts, one thing the juries often do is they get bored. They get bored because you've got hours and hours of people talking about all the degrees they have and what's going on. They want to get right to the point. I think there are some issues with, you know, you misspell the same word the same time, but I like you, saw some difference in some of the other letters. We have a famous shopping strip down here in Beverly Hills called Rodeo Drive. Half the people come down here and they say Rodeo Drive, and half say Rodeo Drive. Sometimes, as you said, you just mispronounce, you just misspell a word because that's just the way it is, and there's multiple people that can do the same thing. So I don't see that evidence as damaging or as potentially damaging as some of the other stuff. But the problem is, as you know, in criminal cases, it's not just that one piece. It's A plus B plus C plus D, and then you start to get the overall picture and you start to paint the picture of the overall case. So I think when we're looking at these things one at a time, they may not be as powerful, but we put them together and the DA, the prosecutor, starts presenting a much clearer picture to give the idea to everybody, look, this is the killer and we finally got him.
Yeah, as a circumstantial case, as many times they are, but it's a strong one. Perhaps you could argue, although you could say, well, what else do they have? Maybe they do have something else that wasn't shown in the documentary because they waited. It's 15 years later. Excuse me. So do they have something else, or are they just relying on these two pieces of information? You know, we don't know, yet.
It's going to be interesting to see, absolutely. And remember, you can there's particular statutes in California in the evidence code that allows prior bad acts to become admissible. So there may be also another battle about what kind of evidence from that 1971 Vermont case where the young lady disappeared that we could also, you know, show as pattern. You know, whenever you get pattern or habitual behavior, the jury oftentimes is allowed to see that as someone who, you know, repeats the behavior and does it in a habitual nature, and then the case gets a lot stronger. That's oftentimes what you have to do in circumstantial cases. But then again, California might even, back to the extradition issue, we might not even see him for some time because Louisiana might want to keep him in jail for 10 or 15 years.
then he probably won't make it, and we might never know, which is kind of scary, too. I think there's another case in California, too. Eureka, California, there was a missing girl, and they said he frequented homeless shelters in Eureka. I don't know why this guy who's a multimillionaire is frequenting homeless shelters, but he's a peculiar character, that's for sure. That we do know. So his lawyer, of course, was presented with these other cold cases, or a couple of them, and said it's just piling on. They're just using him as a scapegoat for any kind of thing they come up with. So they also will have to have some direct, you know, evidence linking him, or at least a timeline that he was there at the time that these things happened. So those are pretty tough cases. You know, from Twitter, a couple of people have chimed in and said, well, what about insanity or diminished capacity defense? You know, they may think about it. He probably would resist it, but also those don't usually work too well. We just saw it didn't work out well with the American Sniper case. What is your take on that, and how often is that used in California?
Well, it is used quite frequently, probably a little bit too much, but every state has a slightly different definition of diminished capacity. He has to know that he has to actively be able to participate in the defense of his case and assist his counsel, and he has to know right from wrong when it really comes down to it. Without all the legal mumbo-jumbo, the basic definition is knowing right from wrong and being able to distinguish that. There will be some significant psychological evaluations. The prosecutor, the defense, and even the judge can all pick a psychologist or psychiatrist. So oftentimes you've got three different exams. So if the lawyers ultimately take that route, there will be some heavy-duty examinations, and I think that what they're going to find, quite frankly, is going to be mind-boggling. But whether it's enough to get to diminished capacity or even an insanity defense, which also some people are talking about, it's going to be a pretty hard sell to do something like that. You know, being crazy and being nutso are two entirely different things when you're talking about the legal world, and I think that that this might be one of those cases where we have to distinguish between the two.
Yeah, well, and of course, because a lot of you would argue, well, you got to be crazy to do it in the first place. So there's crazy, and there's obviously needing, or not even crazy isn't the right word, but you know, having serious mental health issues, and being
right.
criminally culpable. Those are two different things. So, but you know, what's the likelihood? What are you thinking about in terms of him being extradited in a timely manner? Do you think it's really going to be held up in New Orleans for years? Because I don't know if he has years, this guy.
Well, what happens is the prosecutors always make the argument that we have a right to protect the people of our county or of our state and punish those who have committed crimes against our society. So California is going to say, well, we've got the most severe charge. We've got a murder charge, and we should have the right. And what they'll do, they'll try to get a governor's warrant, or the governor will issue it, and then they'll have to say, we're going to come get him. Louisiana can either say, okay, we will participate in extraditing him to you, or they can then try to hold it up and say, you know what, we will recognize your governor's petition and warrant, but we want him to serve the time here first, and then you can have him because we need to make sure our citizens are protected. Now, all the meanwhile, we have the two states fighting over it. We're going to have his lawyer doing what lawyers do. Now, basically, the only way to fight extradition is to make it an identity issue, and that's really the 99% of the ways to fight extradition is to say you've got the wrong individual. He can stall and ask for an identity hearing, or he can, as it seems like, he can say, well, you know what, we really want him, you know, to come out to California. He also might prevail in the suppression issues in Louisiana if the police did not obtain a warrant before going to the hotel room. That case then goes away. And then he's extradited because there's nothing else remaining. So you've got a variety of issues going on. Not to bring up a whole other case, but we recently just had the ex-NFL football player Darren Sharper with all the sexual assaults in four or five different states. And what they ended up doing is they said you're going to get X amount of prison time, and it's going to count for all the different states. So that's a way, by analogy, that you can also deal with this is all the states come together and create a punishment that satisfies each and every jurisdiction.
And if he might take some kind of plea deal, and that might involve a confession, but we don't know if he would get to that point and do it.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, it seems like his lawyer wants to fight.
Yeah, it seems like he wants to fight, sure. Also, a lot of people are questioning on Twitter, what about this documentary? I mean, do you think this jinx is going to come to play? Is it going to help or hurt him? I guess it could go either way. And do you find it curious, the timing of his arrest? A lot of people find that kind of curious, because I'm not sure when they turned over this information, but it certainly wasn't. It had to be before this documentary series aired. So if he's such a dangerous character, why did they wait till the eve of the finale when he made the so-called confession to arrest him? That seems peculiar to me. What's your take on the police and their actions?
It is a little peculiar. I saw that one of the producers of the show interviewed when it was all happening with the accusations that they kind of waited and held on to this for ratings, or and then the police jumped on the case. I don't know. I can tell you this. It wouldn't surprise me, because this is just the way things happen, not just in California, but in a lot of other states and jurisdictions. So I think that perhaps that may have been out there. Now, the producers are claiming it was old footage that they hadn't gone through because they didn't have a staff. And when they hired new editors to go through it, someone came across this and said, oh, my goodness, look at what we have. On its face, yeah, I guess we need to believe them, and you know, until it's shown otherwise.
Yeah, but I'm saying, even though I know that's what they said, it was sitting in a box for a couple of years even, but and then they took it back and said a few months. But whatever it was, what I'm saying is they claim they gave it to the cops. So I'm saying they gave it to the cops before the actual documentary aired. The cops decided to not arrest him until we were close to finishing the documentary series. So the timing on the part of the police seems a little strange to me. But, you know, I guess we don't know what they're claiming. It's just coincidental, I guess. They're claiming that. And as you said, I guess you have to take the cops at their words, too. But it just seems strange. But do you think the documentary series itself, I mean, obviously some of the evidence that surfaced will come into evidence, but do you think it will... could it help him, hurt him, the way he comes off? I mean, I could see it go both, you know, it's a double-edged sword sort of thing, do you think?
It is. I think that some people, it will hurt him tremendously. And then, again, we're talking about California jurors who all want to be screenwriters and actors and actresses. So there are some that are going to say, oh, yeah, I'm fascinated with the guy. He's a celebrity. And you know, oh, and, uh-huh, you know, the twinkle in the eye and say, oh, you know, he can't do wrong. So I think that although it's a small number, you're going to get some people that fall into that category as well.
And you just need that
which
one.
Which is unfortunate,
well,
because...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's unfortunate because we wish that people are judged on the facts and the evidence, and both sides, yeah, defense attorneys and prosecutors, don't want to get caught up in you know, in all the hoopla of everything else that makes people decide or vote one way or the other.
What would you as a lawyer, a defense attorney, if you had the case, you know, if Dick DeGaren called you up and said, hey, I need help because I need to have a California lawyer and I want you to sign on, would you advise that he should testify or not?
Well, I don't know all the facts of the case quite yet, so I would be going, you know, obviously blind. There's a lot of stuff that I'm sure that's out there that nobody knows about, and oftentimes only the defense attorneys and the police get a hold of. I think that he's got a good track record when he testifies, and if you play the statistics,
right,
he's one for one with walking, you know, and getting an acquittal. So I think that sometimes you can't leave that confession out there. You need an explanation, and he might be the only one that can explain it. So I would say, just initially, again, this is not legal advice for anyone out there that's listening, including Mr. Dirtz, but I can tell you this, that we want an explanation for what happened on the HBO documentary, and the only way we can get it is from his direct testimony. So I would lean towards testifying, but then again, you know, you put your client on the stand, and fireworks can happen, and you never know what the result's going to be.
Now, do you think, before we let you go, if it ever happens, that this trial will be televised?
I think that California is big on public access to the court system. But, you know, I don't know what the interest is going to be. I know that you can't prohibit it, but courts are a little bit nervous after the OJ case and for some other televised cases we've seen. But if the media petitions for it, then they have a right to see it. And you know, again, Mr. Dirtz seems like someone that enjoys the spotlight. So he might tell his attorneys, don't object to this. Let you know, this is my final hurrah. I'm sick. I don't know how much longer I have. This is my final go at it here, and I want the world to see it.
He likes to talk. Well, they did televise the Phil Spector trial, right? Or at least one of them, right? Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, we had. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely. There are laws in place that really allow for the public access to the court system, and you know, barring some danger to the witnesses, the defendant, or someone like that, I have never seen a time when they don't allow the cameras in the courtroom.
Well, you don't have to ask about interest, because I know there'll be a lot of interest, and people will be. HLN will go back to their, you know, justice programming just for this trial. I can guarantee it, because this is the big hot new justice story. David Diamond, a pleasure having you on. I always appreciate your analysis. I don't want to keep you too long, but I'm sure we're going to have you back for this case, and hopefully many others as well. Thanks so much for joining us. I know folks want to get in touch with you. Your website is daviddiamondlaw.com, and also they can find you on Twitter at Trial Justice. Thank you so much, David. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Take care. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope. And find out more, as we said. You can reach out on Twitter to David Diamond at Trial Justice. It is the Amy Bethurkway Show. Reach out to us at 347-857-4505. Twitter feed, too, at AB Rights. As the show rolls on, this case certainly is fascinating.
Dated this guy.
Girl, I could get you any kind of romantic position.
Camp on the Amy Beth Arkley Show, and I couldn't resist the Talking Heads and Psychic Killer as we talk about the strange case of Robert Durst. Thanks so much again. Going out to David Diamond, top legal eagle out of California, for his analysis and expertise. And, of course, your comments and questions on the Twitter feed at AB Rice still coming in. Couldn't get to everything, including, Shelley reminded me, don't forget about the face and neck mask that he had. Yeah, apparently he had this face and neck mask, including, I think it was a wig or something attached to it that had, like, salt and pepper hair. So he was definitely back in his disguise mode, as he talked about in the Jinx, about how he decided to disguise himself as a woman, and at one point he shaved his head and shaved his eyebrows. He just had an operation, so I think his head is shaved this time because they put a stent in his head. I mean, he really has some serious medical issues along with his possible mental health problems and perhaps criminal problems. So we'll see how it all plays out. More twists and turns ahead for sure, and we'll find out more about it. I didn't have a chance to discuss this with David. I'm not sure if he knows much about his current wife, Deborah Sheraton, who is a, I think that's how you pronounce it, she is a real estate, a pretty big real estate honcho, I guess, in New York City, and that's, in fact, how they met some years back. Not sure what exactly the union is like or how close they are. I did see a snippet of an interview that Jeanine Pirro, speaking of the DA that was trying to nab him on his first wife's killing, who now is a show on Fox News, interview an associate of this woman, Sheraton, real estate associate, talking about, I think the phrase was, I guess there's some footage in the documentary series, depositions of her and her voice on various phone calls. This man says these are all at least 12 years old, and I think to paraphrase what he said, her reservoir of goodwill towards Robert Durst is all but dried up, something like that. So I guess there's an estrangement, although I had heard a rumor over the weekend that she was going to be arrested and helping to, you know, plot his escape of sorts. I'm not sure, obviously that hasn't happened yet, because she had been to Cuba recently and he had some directions and maps and things of Cuba in his hotel room. They haven't done it yet, so I don't know if they will arrest her, and of course on the hope, I guess, that she would spill what she knows. But she's the wife, and of course you do have that spousal privilege that she could, she doesn't have to, though. I mean, if she wanted to, she could sell the beans, but she can exercise. So who knows? I'm sure there'll be many more fascinating twists, turns, and developments to come. He is being held, as we said, without bail right now in New Orleans, but his attorneys want him to get extradited to California ASAP so they can fight these charges, because I guess they're going to contend he didn't kill Susan Berman. There are other possible suspects, and all you have to do is start pointing to the other guy did it kind of thing, and shoot down their evidence and maybe put him on the stand, because he does make a compelling He did make a compelling witness in one case, and if you watch the documentary series, there are times when I'm thinking, you know, he's got to be guilty, but, you know, well, maybe he just is a hard luck kind of a guy and a weird guy, you know, so maybe he can pull it off. Who knows? I can just say, as someone who writes fictional murder mysteries, this one lives up to the adage, truth is stranger than fiction, really, because in a fictional version, you'd have to somehow make it believable, and this one really, it really does defy credulity, if you know what I mean. Fascinating story, more twists and turns to come. We'll be following it. How about you? Speaking of following intriguing things, if you're a political junkie, you know, you can't start soon enough for this 2016 race. It's official now. They've been talking about it. A lot of folks warming up in the bullpen, especially on the GOP side. The first one out of the gate, officially, Ted Cruz, who announced his 2016 bid for the presidency at Liberty University, the very conservative evangelical college founded by the late Jerry Falwell. Apparently, I didn't realize this, students are mandated to attend such functions or they get fined $10. So whether they're conservative or not, and I guess basically the student body is conservative there, but whether they support Ted Cruz or not, they were forced to show up. And some commentators who were pretty astute and have been following these things very closely said a lot of kids were wearing red T-shirts that are Rand Paul T-shirts, because Rand Paul is the candidate that appeals to conservative youth in this country more than Ted Cruz. So we'll see. But he had his big rollout. Again, he's anti-everything, but what is he for becomes the question. And the other thing is, should he run for president? Because wasn't he born in Canada? Now, he cleared it up, and apparently the statute is thus. If you have a fully naturalized American citizen parent, and his mother is one of those, no matter where you were born, you're allowed to run for president. I never thought that's what it should be, by the way. I'm not arguing that. That's what it should be, but I always thought you had to be born within the United States. Well, remember all that big kerfuffle about President Obama and where he was born, even though he was born in Hawaii, who by the time he was born was a state. They made a big stink out of it. Now, I just saw on The View this morning Nicole Wallace, who is the lone Republican, but a moderate Republican commentator there, when they were talking about it. She said, well, two wrongs don't make a right. In other words, just because people made a big deal out of President Obama and the quote-unquote birth certificate, you shouldn't bother Ted Cruz. But you know who has been consistent? Donald Trump. He's the one that was fanning the flames of the birther movement in against President Obama for years. He now is demanding to see Ted Cruz's birth certificate. So Donald Trump at least is consistent as he embarks on, I think, his fifth or sixth consecutive fake presidential bid and the media tagging along for that crazy ride. So come on, who's at fault here? We'll see. It's going to be a long, strange, and maybe tedious ride, too, especially if you suffer from Clinton fatigue with the whole email kerfuffle. And now there are people on the left, again, who are kind of demanding that Elizabeth Warren toss her name into the ring and run in the primary to give Hillary a run for her money and make her, you know, adhere to liberal leftist principles. No matter how many times Elizabeth Warren says she's not running, they want to draft her to do it. I don't know. What do you think? Does she need a primary opponent? I think the press and all the Republicans against her is will probably be enough. But, you know, have at it. It's a long way to go. And, you know, as I said, when the email thing seemed to be bubbling up, and now I'm not sure if it blew over or not enough, she apparently is still gearing up, tried to make nice with the press with a quip or two the other day where she said, I'm always time for new things, a new grandchild, a new hairdo, a new relationship with the press, a new email account. So she kind of made a joke. When she keeps it light, she has a light touch. When she gets too serious and too kind of shrill, she can take on the press in that way. She should, you know, stick with the former, and she might win over a lot more voters and press people, and also just make herself, you know, make her life a lot more comfortable during the campaign, which appears to be a happening thing. But there are other names that could emerge if it's not. So don't panic, Democrats. There's still plenty of time. And the pundits, you know, they've been talking about it for months, and they're going to keep on talking. Keep on keeping on, as they say. You know who's not talking? Starbucks. Remember last week we talked about this kind of controversial thing about they were going to start talking about race by having the baristas write on all the cups race together, or they had stickers at some of the larger Starbucks. Well, they got a kind of a blowback about it to start a conversation on race relations that you were supposed to. It was never really clear what you were supposed to do with it. I remember I was in Starbucks last week, and they hadn't started it yet, and I asked one of the young kids behind the counter, and I said, well, how come we're not doing it? And he said, well, it starts on Monday or whatever it was. And then we just started talking. I said, well, how do you feel about it? Do you feel awkward about initiating this conversation? And he said, nah, you know, I don't know. You know, he was kind of hesitating. He didn't want to. And I was just saying, yeah, that's where I would think might be awkward for the young people particularly. They're mostly young people, but whoever's behind the counter, because first of all, they're busy. They're usually too busy to get engaged in a long conversation. They're usually very friendly. The one that I go to, they're always very friendly. And they'll talk, you know, a small talk kind of hi, how you doing kind of conversation. But do you want to initiate the conversation on race? I guess what I would envision it happening, if they did it, they would just put it on there and it would be up to the customer to start the conversation. But, you know, I think the heart was in the right place with Howard Schultz. I'm not so sure it made a lot of sense. Of course, they have dropped it now, and they said what they're going to do is have various forums. They're also going to work on a concerted effort to have more stores in underserved areas. I didn't think there was an underserved area when a Starbucks came came to Starbucks. There's like a Starbucks in every corner, but I guess there are some areas and more poorer neighbors that don't have Starbucks yet, so they're going to work on that and work on getting more minority representation in management and that sort of thing, which I think is good, and have forums and have discussions that way. So they got the conversation started, sort of, even if they don't really have it, if you know what I mean. So a little less conversation sometimes. You get your point across, and then you leave it to the people's imagination. It can work. Speaking of conversations, reach out 347-857-4505, Twitter feed too. And AB writes, it is the AB Bitter Commission. Find it.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less bark. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart, and maybe satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Baby, close your eyes and listen to the music. Dig to the summer breeze. It's a groovy night and I can show you how to use it. To come along with me and put your mind at ease. Hey! Less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less spark. A little less bite, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby. Come on, baby, I'm tired of talking. Grab your coat and let's start walking. Come on, come on.
Come on, come on.
Come on, come on.
Come on, come on.
Don't procrastinate, don't articulate. Girl, it's getting late. You just sit and wait around. Hey, a little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't
case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
See you.
Run for Your Life. That's a song that the Boston Globe and the Move On folks would like Elizabeth Warren to take heed of. Run for Your Life on the Amy Beth Arkley Show. No word yet from the Warren camp. And A Pair for Howard Schultz. Girls Talk from Dave Edmunds and A Little Less Conversation from Elvis Presley. Yes, Starbucks realized less sometimes is more. We put it out there. Now we'll just let it linger and let people run with it in their own way. I think that's a good idea. Less is more, and more sometimes is more. Stephen King says he's paying a lot more, and he doesn't mind in terms of taxes for living in what he calls the most beautiful state in the country, but he now wants an apology from the conservative governor of Maine, Paul LePage, who apparently is trying to abolish the income tax in Maine, and in so doing gave a speech saying that some of our best and most noted residents are moving, citing Stephen King as moving to Florida. Now, Stephen King does admit he has a residence in Florida for part of the winter, but he pays taxes and maintains his main residence in Bangor, Maine. He said in 2013, the last year they have to have all the information calculated, he and his wife paid $1.4 million in taxes to Maine, state taxes, and he said he considers it a privilege to do so because it's the price of living in that state and giving back for those who have done well. But he wants an apology from the governor. Didn't get it. What he did get was when they reposted the speech online, they took out the line about Stephen King. But that wasn't enough for Mr. King. He tweeted, I guess for some people it's easier to dish out than to take back. Ouch. You don't want to get into a match like that with Stephen King. You're asking for a horror show, Governor LePage. Speaking of shows, not a horror show at all. I was so lucky to have finally seen the Carole King musical Beautiful, or it's Beautiful, the Carole King musical on Broadway last weekend. Great show. If you love that era, if you like that music of Carole King and Jerry Goffin, Cynthia Wilde, Barry Mann, and all the little stories, the backstories of their lives and how they intertwined, it is done so beautifully. The Tony winner, Jessie Mueller, had wrapped up her run early in March, but they have a new young woman, Shalina Kennedy, I believe her name is, and she did a fine job. So good stuff all around. I just also saw yesterday that Sony Pictures has bought the rights for a film version. So you'll have a movie musical version of that great production. But if you have a chance to see it on Broadway, or there's going to be a national tour, look for it at a city near you. It's worth seeing, especially, as I said, if you love that music and you love that era, you're going to really enjoy it. And it's moving, too. So talk about Sweet Season. It's one of Carole King's solo classics on the Amy Beth Arkley Show as we get ready to embrace spring.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes the we
all happening at the zoo. I do believe it, I do believe it's true. Light and tumble journey from the east side to the park, just a fine and fancy ramble to the zoo. But you can take us across town bus if it's raining or it's cold, and the animals will love it if you do.
Song.
Flower Girl with the Cowsills on the Amy Beth Arcui Show as we think spring. Also, Carole King, Sweet Season, Simon and Garfunkel at the Zoo, and Good Morning Starshine from Oliver. And Friday, I mean, it's only 40 nippy degrees in my backyard, but I'm thinking spring already. We deserve it, right? So we'll enjoy our Spring Awakening special this Friday at noon. The birds, the bees, and everything else you think about with spring, including all your requests and dedications in the mix this Friday, noon, later on demand. Join us. Hey, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, reach out to the website, amybetharkowee.com. We're booking, believe it or not, for May, June, and beyond. Trudy's got the big book. Lots of great, interesting folks coming up in the next few weeks, and hopefully you could be one of them. If you've got a story to tell, we want to hear about it. So reach out, and we'll see about getting you on the Media Bites award-winning internet show and podcast. Simple as that. Hey, let's do up our Inspiration to Action Challenge shout-out today to Denise in Chattanooga, Tennessee. She says she's working on a memoir, another one with the memoirs. I love it. And considering a series of children's books, she says, you've got me to realize I don't have to dedicate full time to the craft of writing, but I have to do something every day, and I'm doing it slowly but surely. You got me off my proverbial duff after too long a dormancy, she writes. So thank you so much. Well, thank you, Denise. I appreciate it. Glad it's working for you. And, yeah, one step at a time. I always say one page at a time, one day at a time. We can get there. I know the feeling. I'm doing it, too. So keep working. And thank you so much. I'm glad it's working for you. If it's working for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. Reach out to the website. It's amybetharkowee.com. And if it's not and you need a little cajoling, hey, let's start a creativity coaching conversation. I'd love to help you. First one is always on me. Again, at the website, it's amybetharkowee.com. Please give me a week or so to get back to you, and we will talk and get you started. Speaking of starting, guess who's starting up again? I got a tweet from Dondi who said, Zimmerman, jealous of Durst, needs the attention. Yeah, George Zimmerman is back in the news. He sent me the link. Apparently, George Zimmerman today put a 13-minute video on his lawyer's website. Oy, who is the lawyer now? I don't think it's the same guy he had during his trial. He's blaming President Obama for all his woes. Yeah, of course, everybody blames President Obama. The former neighborhood volunteer watchman acquitted in 2012 of the shooting death of Trayvon Martin has lashed out at President Obama and said he feels no guilt in the racially charged case that galvanized the country. It's a 13-minute video posted on the website of his attorney. Zimmerman says the Obama administration acted irresponsibly in publicly expressing empathy for the family of Trayvon Martin, who died, as we know, February 26, 2012, in Sanford, Florida, after that scuffle with Zimmerman. In the tape, I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to have to watch it later because I can't do it while we're on the air, but I'm just reading the blurb here. Zimmerman says he does not feel he did anything wrong and that federal officials treated him unfairly. Now, they aren't charging him federally, right? They just said they weren't going to pursue that. He compared himself to Anne Frank. Are you kidding me? The Holocaust victim, whose published diary offered a window into her suffering and more reference to God. Made reference to God. He said he has a clean conscience. Here's his quote. Only in a true life or death scenario can you have mental clearness to know that you cannot feel guilty for surviving, Zimmerman said. In all fairness, you cannot, as a human, feel guilty for living, for surviving. Wow. When asked on the tape which person he feels has been the most unfair to him, Zimmerman replied, by far the President of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama. Oof. Well, you know, Zimmy, he's been out of the news for a while, so he's got to get back into it. Ouch, too bad David Diamond left too early. We'll have to talk about this later. He is looking for attention. There are some people who just crave that attention. They claim they don't like it, yet they crave it. Intriguing. Your views, reach out via Twitter, AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505. It's crazy, but it's there. It's not really beautiful, if you know what I'm saying.
You got to this get is. Out every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart. Then people gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful as you feel. Waiting at the station with a workday window blowing, I've got nothing to do but watch the passers mirrored in their faces. I see frustration growing.
bar to Ichiku Park. That's where I've been.
What did you do there?
I got high.
What did you feel there?
Well, I cried.
But why the tears there?
Tell you why.
It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
Ducks with a bun. They all come out to groove about, be nice and have fun and listen. I tell you what I'll do.
What will you do?
I'd like to go there now with you. You can miss out school.
Won't that be?
Why go to learn the words of food?
We'll get high.
Will we touch there?
Will we touch the sky?
That's why the tea is there.
I tell you why.
It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
The ducks with a bun. They all come out to groove about, be nice and have fun in the sun.
It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful. It's all too beautiful.
If it's only 40 degrees, I'm itching to go to Ichiku Park and welcome spring. On the Amy Beth Arkwe Show, also Carole King title track from that phenomenal show, Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And there you go. Embrace your dreams. Live your passions. Go for it. And you can live a great life like Carole King. You can just see it on her face, looking and sounding so great in her mid-70s. The alternative is to get bogged down in bitterness like someone like George Zimmerman. Not a good thing. Come on, George, you're free and clear. Embrace your life. Don't blame President Obama and other people, and don't go around wielding a gun, because trouble will follow. I can guarantee it. And I hope nobody else gets hurt. There you go. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. Busy day. Appreciate David Diamond so much for coming on and giving us his expertise and analysis regarding the Durst case. Don't forget, if you missed the show, want to hear it again, all the shows are archived for podcasts, so shortly after it's over, it'll be up and running. Follow the Amy Beth Arkwe Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. You can also download episodes at iTunes, NetNow, or at my website, amybetharkwe.com. And stop by if you want to be a guest on the show, too, because Trudy's got the big book. We're booking for May, June, and beyond. Also, don't forget our Rock and Roll Hall of Fame special in April. We're looking for your suggestions for those who've been snubbed who deserve consideration for 2016. Think about it. Let us know ASAP via Twitter at AB Writes with the hashtag Rock Hall of Fame, or the website abbetharkwe.com, and we'll play it on April 17th as we salute the incoming class of 2015 and our wish list for next year on the eve of the induction, which I think takes place in Cleveland this year on April 18th. There you have it.
That's the last straw.
I guess we're almost ready to get out of here.
If that's not enough to get you out of bed, something's seriously wrong.
Wow, that was like a miracle.
One of those performances that I will never, ever forget.
We want you to have a great damn day.
That inspired me to be a better person.
Well, I hope he inspired you a little bit. Hope you had some fun. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate the comments on the Twitter feed. And thanks again to David Diamond. Follow him at Twitter, at Trial Justice. And again, follow us on Twitter at AB Writes, our producer, Trudy Hart, at Radio Trudy. You can friend me on Facebook. We'll give you updates, all of that good stuff. Or, of course, all roads lead back to the website, abbatharkawi.com, where you can peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon Mystery Series, both Killing Time and Dead Silence, available for ebook and paperback. Working on number three, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see. I'm working on it. And leave you with a quote from Elmo Leonard, one of my favorites, said, "If it sounds like writing, I rewrite it." Think about that as you take it one page at a time. Hey, thanks to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. Thank you for making the show so much fun. Thank you for joining us. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Hey, come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkwe Show. Leave you with a couple more fun times, springtime songs. Take care.
So that every mouth can be fed. In the morning, saving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
I'm so proud to know that she is mine.
Good day.